This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This episode is brought to you by Amazon Prime. You know Amazon Prime is not just a shipping subscription, right? It's got everything, including streaming TV and movies on Prime Video. And of course, Prime's fast, free shipping. Go from watching your favorite shows to getting your favorite things. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever you're into.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your skin refuses to be defined by age. That's why Agency Design, Future Formula, a personalized anti-aging formula prescribed by a dermatology provider to treat fine lines, wrinkles, dark spots, and more. Agency has clinically proven ingredients like tretinoin, which is up to 20 times stronger than over-the-counter retinol. Future Formula by Agency. Get your first month free at withagency.com. That's WYTHAGENCY.com. $4.95 shipping and handling, subject to consultation. Subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Hello and welcome to the BBC Gardeners World magazine podcast, brought to you by the team here at the magazine. Join us as we chat all things gardening with the nation's favourite experts.
Do you want your garden to look sensational this summer and learn how to take your borders from dull to dazzling? Hello, I'm Claire Venice, content creator at Gardeners World magazine, and I'm here with Daniel Hale, head gardener at Brodsworth Hall and Gardens in Doncaster. Brodsworth boasts colourful borders which have been restored to their Victorian grandeur, as well as topiary, ferns and over 100 varieties of roses. Brodsworth is also part of our 2-for-1 Gardens Guide, which is on sale now. Pick up a copy and you can enjoy 2-for-1 entry to over 400 gardens, including Brodsworth, which are packed full of inspiration for your garden. Dan, it's lovely to have you join us. Thank you very much. Now, Brodsworth has plenty of gardening inspiration, particularly for beautiful summer borders. Can you explain a bit more about the garden, please?
So the garden's predominantly based on its 1860s design, so it's Victorian in style. The Tellison family inherited the estate in 1860s, of which they inherited the Georgian house and landscape. They decided to pull down the Georgian house, build a new modern Victorian Osborne in style hall that you see now, and then recreate a series of what we call garden rooms in miniature. So you've got every kind of key Victorian garden aspect, from huge bedding, rose garden, Victorian fern dell, a rose dell, thousands of pieces of topiary. It's very much about the formality, the symmetry. It's a garden for all seasons, is what we always say, and it's the garden that keeps giving.
It sounds like it's also a garden for everybody.
Oh, it is.
So can you explain a bit more about the borders, particularly the herbaceous borders? What do you have in the borders that sing every year?
So we've got two herbaceous borders. We've got what we call the small herbaceous, which is actually quite large. And then we've got the large herbaceous as well. But the small herbaceous, I suppose, is the kind of most formal of the herbaceous borders. It's the most kept. The large herbaceous is a bit more informal in its approach. But the small herbaceous basically is the backdrop to the rose garden. So that the herbaceous itself is backed by a beautifully clipped yew hedge with column pillars that kind of run and divide the herbaceous border into sections. So it's a beautiful section, and it's got about 6 zones in there. We do have a leaky pipe system running through that now, perforated pipe as well, which helps us out in the summer period. But the herbaceous is designed to try and really give us interest from spring right up until autumn, winter time as well. So we start with the earlier kind of flowering things in there. So we've started to put like tulip displays in into the beds as well. We're looking at Nepeta, Hemerocallis, depends how you want to say it. And that's become one of the kind of main feature plants that we're running in there. The beds are designed so they're all kind of mirror image each other. So we start off with a centerpiece, and the center bed's got the most kind of prominent feature plants. So when I'm talking feature plants, we're talking the kind of taller, more dominant feature plants in the bed. So we're looking at false red bananas, Enseti, which obviously gives us that kind of really dramatic feature plant in the bed. And then we're looking at Phlox, Rudbeckia. One of the plants that we're starting to introduce a lot more of into the herbaceous as well is dahlias. I think dahlias are really starting to have a bit of a surge again in popularity across gardens, and we're really keen to kind of add those into the beds because they can really give you later interest when you're starting to get into that kind of more September, October period. We've got Nectar Scordon in there, which is a really interesting earlier flowering bulb as well, which is really good for pollinators. We've got Chamassia, which obviously, again, is a really early bulb, which comes up quite nicely. Primula viali is another one that we've got in there. And then we're kind of looking at scabious. So we've got the smaller varieties. We've got the giant scabious, which is fantastic, again, for the pollinators. And just to the right-hand side of the herbaceous border, we've actually got our beehives situated now as well. So we're really trying to promote, you know, the pollinators in the beds working alongside with the plants. I think one of the kind of the standout ones in there, which I don't see used that much, is the Maclea cordata, which is a really interesting foliage plant, which gets really, really large, almost kind of like a fascia leaf in size, just to try and give it, but it's almost got like a purpley tinge to the foliage as well, and then a beautiful flower that appears later in the season. And that can get about 8-9 foot tall. You know, you've got to really careful whereabouts you put it in the bed. Cardoons, Sayonara cardoons, are really popular in there. They're the ones where if you're looking for some really interesting height and impact in your bed, you know, the ones that we're growing now are probably getting to about 9-10 foot on average in the beds. So obviously take a lot of staking and interest. But I think they're the ones that, because of the height and the interest, they're the ones that are really drawing visitors across to the herbaceous border now.
So you're finding these centrepieces are a real eye-catcher then for the borders?
Yeah, and I think they've got to be. I think the one thing with herbaceous, obviously, if you can plant it just so it all comes up at the same time, but the key is to have the plants seasonally coming out with interest, but not just that, the different heights as well. One of the things I'd say about herbaceous borders as well is, you know, sometimes less is more, but actually having, you know, large clumps of each variety rather than having too many varieties of different plants, because it can look a little bit confused. So we tend to always plant in, you know, 3s, 5s, and 7s if we're putting the herbaceous together. And then it's coming up with obviously the colour palette that you're trying to achieve as well, with it being situated in the backdrop of the rose garden, which is a lot of pinks and whites with the roses. We've gone for kind of a lot more yellows and reds and purples to have that nice contrast against the rose borders, really.
That lovely summer heat colour.
Yeah. We like to call it like a summer kiss. Is how we've described it in the past, because it's really just kind of, you know, you pick it up, it's there, and it draws you across. And, you know, I suppose when the roses are kind of fading down, you know, back end of August into September, the herbaceous border's kind of coming into its peak. So the two really contrast well against each other being in a similar area.
Yeah, sounds beautiful. I love the name, Summer Kiss. Could become a thing.
Hopefully.
That is the thing about making your border last throughout the early summer, all the way through to that late summer, maybe even early autumn. What would you recommend are really good value plants that see you through as long as they possibly can through that time?
Well, I think things like dianthus, you know, I think that they'll last, you know, from late spring, early summer, right through to autumn time. Your different varieties of Rudbeckias as well. I think they're, you know, they'll just keep coming back. Hemeroclis, again, the daylilies. I know obviously you say daylilies and then you think, oh, the flower once and they'll not come back, but actually they will produce new flowers and you can get longer flowering, more perennial varieties as well. But obviously you can't look past, you know, your kind of geraniums as well. You know, your geraniums will keep coming back, particularly varieties like Roseanne or Anne Folkard, you know, and they're really good for kind of more front end of the borders, you know, to give you a little bit of ground cover in particular areas as well. The Scabious, again, you know, the different ones, the small variety, the Scabosa, you know, and the Clephora, the tall giant Scabious, you know, that one again will just keep giving and giving. Phlox. The phlox is an interesting one because obviously it can get quite tall. So if you are going to plant it, it's making sure you're putting it into like the middle or the back of the bed, and it can be quite dominant. So it's keeping it under control while you're doing it as well. And the different achilleas, yarrows, you know, again, they'll give you interest kind of right through the period as well. And Catmint Nepeta, again, is a long-lived herbaceous perennial that, again, great for the front of the beds. And I think that's, you know, important that you do consider the size of the plants and whereabouts they are positioned within the borders as well.
Good point. Do you give the plants a cut, a prune, sort of early summerish, to keep them flowering longer?
Some things we do, some we don't. We haven't really so much over the last few years. We'll do a little bit of a Chelsea chop, as you say, in certain aspects. But, you know, we don't prioritise that as a job with the herbaceous. Sometimes I think it's nice to try and allow it just to allow it be a bit more free-flowing in its approach, to be honest. We make sure we get the supports in there nice and early. We know if things are going to get too tall, you know, the supports will go in from, you know, early springtime. They're in there. We know which of the plants are going to be the most kind of dominant ones and are going to spread, you know, and are going to get too tall for their actually the spacing that they've got. So we, you know, we preempt those types of things. But when it comes to the Chelsea chop, we haven't done so much of that, I'll be honest.
Okay. You mentioned supports. That's a really important tip, isn't it, of something to do because, well, I've done it. I've left it too late and then you've got a plant that's just drooping everywhere and not showing itself off to its best ability. Pop in supports as soon as you can.
Yeah, I mean, so we've already done majority of our supports. For a while, we went the easier kind of metal supports that you could get, but we've now started to try and make our own out of bits of willow and things that we can collect, hazel from the garden, and try to be, you know, kind of keep, because in a way, the supports can be actually be the early interest sometimes. You know, if you're putting them in, if you can do a really nice structural support in your bed, you know, that stands out as much as the plant, you know. So the guys are really interested now in kind of being more creative with those and making them as kind of a statement piece in the border as well before your plants actually get established. But you're right, the earlier the better. And I think that's just comes from an understanding of what plants you've got in there. You know, so, you know, if you're new into a garden, you're probably going to have to see it through the seasons to understand what you're going to need to support against. If you've obviously have had a garden longer, you'll have that better understanding.
This episode is brought to you by Amazon Prime. You know Amazon Prime is not just a shipping subscription, right? It's got everything, including streaming TV and movies on Prime Video. And of course, Prime's fast, free shipping. Go from watching your favorite shows to getting your favorite things. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever you're into.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Free samples, free shipping, and our 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step and into your home too.
Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I love the fact that you've got a beehive in the border.
Yes.
That's brilliant.
So basically the beehives are literally situated just to the end. So that they're set back just back of the yew hedge, but the yew hedge is slightly lower there so you can actually see them. The ones we've got are actually WBC beehives, which are the true Victorian style ones. So the white as well. So they stand out really nicely. And again, it's a feature. You know, people enjoy walking through the herbaceous and seeing all the bees on there. They think, oh, there's lots of bees. And then all of a sudden they come to the end and there's the beehives, you know, really active. And, you know, I think it's a really important part of why the herbaceous and the plants at Broadsworth have been as successful as they have been in the last few years as well.
And has that been very important to you then as the head gardener to make sure that you are planting plants in the herbaceous border for pollinators?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, people love seeing the bees working on the plants, you know, and I think the more we can do, the better. I mean, we have got an amazing laburnum arch at Broadsworth as well, which the bees absolutely love. And obviously kind of late May, early June, when that's in flower and the yellow tassels are drooping down, you can walk through that section, just hear the buzz of the bees in the arch, and it's incredible. And it's all about that sensory experience as well, isn't it? And I think bees, you know, contribute massively to that. So when we are putting the new planting in, there is always a little bit of, right, is this a good pollinator? Is this good for the bees? You know, and kind of taking that approach to it now as well.
What are your favourite plants then to plant for pollinators there?
I think Monarda. Monarda's a really good one. The one that's really popular that we have is Cambridge Scarlet, the more red one. And that's popular not just with the bees, but with visitors as well. I think out of all the plants in the herbaceous border, that one's probably picked up Angelica as well. You know, so the Angelica, I don't often see that much these days in herbaceous borders, but we use it as a really tall feature plant. It is a biannual, but they will kind of, you know, they'll spread, they'll sow themselves. So you've got to keep on top of them that they don't get too much and too dominant, but you can obviously dig them up and pot them on. So you've always got that succession planting. But, you know, in the kind of second seasons, you know, they can get, you know, again, 8-9 foot, amazing to the backdrop. So again, need really big supports. But the flowers when they're out are just full of bees. The giant scabious that I spoke about as well, that one is just like bee city. You literally sometimes can't even see the flowers because there's that many bees on there. You know, I mean, I suppose salvias, you know, I think most of the things in the herbaceous borders are going to be kind of really bee friendly that we're putting in there now. But those are the main ones. I spoke about Nectar Scordon earlier, and that one's an earlier bulb, and obviously Nectar Scordon, you know, it kind of tells you what it is, but the bees absolutely adore that as well. So yeah, and I suppose it's colours, you know, they do draw more to the kind of purples, don't they, as well. So it's, yeah, so, you know, I think it is a really important aspect of what we do.
And I imagine the rose garden as well draws them in. Do you put roses in the border or do you keep them separate? They're in the rose garden themselves.
We keep them separate. And that's just down to the fact that we wanted to put more herbaceous in the herbaceous, really. When I started, they did have a few worm roses dotted through there, but we have actually got two separate rose gardens. So I decided, let's take those out, keep the roses in the rose garden and just have, you know, this blanket of herbaceous added in. And then also what, because the roses were used as kind of like the dot feature plants for a while, which you can do, obviously, you know, and it does work, but we like to change it up and, you know, we're alternating because we have such big flower garden and floral displays every year. We do keep a lot of the dot plants that we use. So like Moussa Bijou and the false red bananas and cannas. We tend to grow Ricinus communis every year as well, which obviously, you know, can be highly poisonous, but planted, it does look amazing. The false castor oil plant, as they'll call it. So we do put them in the herbaceous border as well.
What's your favourite variety of rose? What do you have that you love the best there?
Well, the one that's in flower at the moment is Canary Bird, which is a beautiful yellow flower on it. And obviously it comes out earlier than all the others. It's fantastic as a shrub or a standard as well. We have both in the beds and everybody really likes that. I think the one that I always go to as being the best do-gooder, as I like to call. So a do-gooder means a plant that just keeps producing for me, is Blush Noisette, which is a pink flowering climber or shrub. We use that on a lot of the arch. We've got an original 1860s Victorian rose arch, and all the roses that will grow up there are all what we call period correct. So all the roses would have been available to the Victorian gardeners. Madame Alfred Carrier, I think, as well. Cecile Bruner. You know, all these varieties are the ones that we kind of look at. And then Rosa Tuscany as well. I really like that because of the darkness of it and the scent.
What advice would you give to listeners wanting to create their own sensational summer borders this summer?
Well, I suppose it's understanding your garden, I think, first and foremost. So, you know, I think you've got to have seen it through at least all the seasons to understand what your garden's going to be able to give you back with the planting. I think in any good garden and in any, if plants are ever going to be successful, it's all about the planning and the preparation. So it's making sure that you know what your soil type is, whether you are south facing or north facing, how much light you're going to get in there as well, how much drainage. And the size of the beds, and you know, so there's a lot of different things, you know, I think you've got to take into account when you're creating a border. But I think it's having that understanding of the height and the colours that you want to go for. And I think, like I said earlier on, I think you've got to be planting in large clumps of less plants, if that makes sense. So maybe not kind of going for 25, 30 different varieties of plant, but focusing on, you know, maybe 9 to 15 plants, but planting them in larger groups of 3, 5, 7s and 9s, always in odd numbers, never in evens. And I think that's probably, you know, your best way. And then I suppose as well is, how are people going to see your border as well? So are people just going to see it from a front view? Are they going to see it from a back, the side? So when you are putting in your different heights, you know, do you just have small, medium, large to the back? But actually, if it's a bed where you're going to see it from the backside as well, your taller plants are going to be better than in the middle, and then having medium and small either side of that as well. So I suppose it's understanding how everything's going to be viewed, you know, in the garden, really.
Are there any quick garden fixes that people can do now that can help them with their summer borders this year?
It's all about soil preparation. I mean, you know, any successful garden, successful plants got the right soil. It's understanding of what you're trying to achieve. So, you know, with the herbaceous plants, you know, they're going to get and need probably a lot of water potentially in the summertime. So getting that mulch in there for water retention, you know, is really important. Like I said, we've set up a leaky pipe, perforated pipe irrigation system, which actually uses a lot less water than going out with a hose pipe long-term as well. So again, is a good way of reducing your, you know, water flow as well. You know, and then I suppose it's, you know, if you're deciding on what plants you're looking at, I mean, dahlias, you're starting to pop them on now. You know, we've just decided off the cuff that we're now going to do a massive dahlia display down on the target range. So we've now got hundreds, if not thousands, of dahlias being potted on. And then they'll be, obviously, we'll then have to bring them in every year. And then we can divide the tubers and take cuttings and grow that long-term for the site, you know, which is more sustainable, I suppose, in its approach with the planting as well. So I think it's planning, it's that preparation. We're growing all our summer bedding at the moment as well. So all the seeds have now been sown. So I suppose it's being prepared and understanding what you're wanting to achieve and what you want in your garden to look like. I always say you're kind of working constantly 6 months at least in advance of yourself to make sure you know where you're going into the next season. For a place like us that do the large scale bedding schemes, we plant out, you know, just give you an example, we plant 24,000 bedding plants, 7,000 to 10,000 bulbs every October, and that's for the spring. And then as soon as we've planted that in the October, we've then designing the summer bedding, and then that's then getting grown ready for to go in kind of late May, June. So it's preparation, getting inspiration from visiting gardens as well. Most gardens have taken inspiration from other gardens, you know, so I think it's a really important aspect of it, really, is finding a style you like and then trying to kind of stick to that. I think you can get to a point where sometimes it becomes too much and too confused. So I think it's very much like, this is the style we like. We're going to go down the more architectural planting style, more modern style. This is what we're going to focus on, you know, and kind of sticking to that, you know, in that part of the garden.
And I suppose, like you're doing this year with the dahlias, you can try something new each year. It doesn't have to be a whole new set of bedding, but you can try something different every year.
Yeah, of course you can. Yeah, you know, and I think it's even if it, sometimes it can be the same plants, but just different colour combinations. You know, I think particularly with bedding, springtime you're more limited, you know, so you're obviously looking at kind of primulas, bellis, pansies, wallflowers as your kind of main. But when you come to the summer bedding plants, you've then got an absolute plethora of different plants you can choose from and different colours. So what we've decided and started to do at Brodsworth over the last few years is actually, instead of me just designing the flower garden each year, I always work with one of the garden team, because I think you can get into this habit of, well, these are my favourite plants and these are my favourite colours. So it's all, you know what I mean? So it can always be very similar. So what we do now is work with one of the team. And I think, you know, it's an expression of your personality, I think, the plants and the colour that you'll choose in your garden. And that's what we really like. And plus, it's a great opportunity for the garden team to learn. And there's not many places that you'll get the chance to do these amazing bedding schemes.
Have you ever, as a result of that, have you ever found a combination that you didn't think was going to work that did work?
We tend to use bananas in the flower garden, and I think people are still surprised, particularly up north, obviously, that you can actually grow them in your gardens and they're quite happy. I think a lot of people have then gone on to use particularly Musa Bajou then into their gardens as well. Obviously, you'll need to overwinter them or wrap them, but they are great for summer architectural interest in your garden.
It's quite fun, isn't it, to have something unexpected in the borders?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you plant summer bulbs as well in the borders?
Yeah, so I think we mentioned earlier, we've got nectar scordon in there, we've got camassias coming up, we've got some of the later flowering fritillaries as well. That's kind of the main focus of what we've got, the summer bulb interest at the moment. We do use alliums in a lot of the beds, and we've got agapanthus, you know, coming up as well in those. So we're kind of looking at it in that context, really. I mean, the alliums in particular go really well with the laburnum arch, because we've got obviously the beautiful tall purple varieties and then the amazing yellow tassel flowers coming down. And I think alliums, again, have just had a real kind of surge of interest, haven't they, over the last few years, that everybody loves them and wants to see them in the garden. Structurally amazing, and so many different varieties to choose from as well.
I can imagine the alliums with the angelica would be quite a fun combination popping up.
Yeah. And that's what it is. And, you know, and a lot of the time as well, I think it's trial and error sometimes is gardening as well, and coming up with these different schemes. And, you know, hopefully 9 times out of 10, you'll get it right. But, you know, it is fun to be able to play with the plants and see how combinations work. And you try and you learn from these things. And I think that's part of gardening, is being experimental and enjoying playing with the different planting combinations.
Do you have borders that are both sunny and shady? Because that can also be a challenge, can't it, in a garden, if you have a combination of that, or you just have a shady border or just a sunny border. How do you choose the right plants for those locations?
So we've got both. The main kind of shady areas, we're kind of looking at more woodland style ground cover plants. So we've got a lot of ferns in those areas, hydrangeas, begonias, fatsias, all these types of things. Even sometimes if you get a little bit of sun coming round, so things like trachycarpus, you don't need direct sunlight, you know, as long as they're getting a little bit, they'll be happy. The different palms, you know, again, a plant that doesn't get used for me enough in gardens or spoken about as being a really good architectural plant is Fatsia japonica. You know, again, that's really fine in shaded areas. Your hydrangeas will absolutely love it. They'll flourish. And as we know, there's hundreds of varieties that you can choose from there. And hydrangeas and ferns as a combination work really, really well. And obviously geraniums, perennial geraniums, Rugosia, Rowan palmatum. An interesting one is Ligularia. which is the Rocket. So again, that's absolutely fine. You know, in sun or partial shade as well. And again, a really good one for butterflies and bees. So really interesting with the foliage and then amazing yellow towered spikes plants on there. And like I said, the different Rugosia varieties, Erythroniums, you know, Lily of the Valley, you know. Yeah, it's...
We're exhausting your list. Have you found that the weather we've been having over the last few years, a couple of summers ago, it was baking hot. Last summer, it was damp and wet. How are they affecting your gardening choices and in your borders?
Well, I think one of the first things to say is you can't really follow the garden months anymore, the seasons that we used to be able to do. I think you've got to, instead of being gardening month by month, it's gardening day by day now. I think that's first and foremost. I think we've got to be aware that things are changing. One of the things we'll do a lot of is I spoke about earlier, is mulching beds and making sure that we've got a really good layer of mulch, compost on there to help retain that moisture, particularly in the kind of really drier summer periods. It's definitely made us kind of pick up and think, you know, what can we do and what plants should we be looking at? So we've recently done a large-scale project called the Summer House Project. It's kind of at the very end of all our evergreen shrub borders, but we decided to call the end of the shrub borders the full stop, and, you know, the Summer House is the start of the kind of rockery alpine section of the garden which we've got. So we've put a Mediterranean scheme on there now, delving into this Mediterranean style planting. You know, there was endless amounts of plants we could choose from. So we planted this garden in October, which wouldn't have been my first choice, but due to timescales and things getting done, we just had to put it in then. So it's already gone through -8, wettest 6 months on record.
Yes.
Snow, gale force winds, you name it, and it's still incredible. It's still, you know, growing and looking fantastic.
Interesting to try out and see. What plants do you have there in the Mediterranean border?
Of hundreds of plants, which was great, because when we started looking into it, we didn't kind of know exactly where we'd be able to go with it. But just to give you a kind of few that most people grow is obviously rosemary, the different sages, purple, yuccas, you know, which again have been absolutely fine. I'll just go back to the preparation of the planting again was key. So we did do a few test digs on the banking before we put this planting in to make sure the drainage was really good on there. And then we did incorporate quite a lot of gravel into the banking to make sure the drainage was better as well over time. So these plants will survive, but again, it was down to the prep. So arbutus, the strawberry tree. So arbutus do really well at Broadsworth. We do tend to use them across the site as a feature tree. I mean, the backdrop of the kind of shrub borders. And again, it's a fantastic Mediterranean tree. Cistus as well. We've used a lot of different cistus. Genista, euphorbia, but the honey spurge one, which is obviously the Mediterranean one, honey spurge because of the smell. Phlomis in there. Cercis as well. So again, so we've got like a real interest of kind of more smaller kind of perennial plants and then these dot interesting feature plants. I suppose the one that's getting most of the interest is Tamarix tetandra. And that one's a really interesting small tree, native obviously to the Mediterranean area, and is obviously an evergreen where it originates from, but deciduous over here. And it's just now starting to come into leaf. And then in about June, July time, it'll have these amazing pink tassel-like flowers coming down. And that, again, will probably get to about 9-10 foot. So that's been kind of like sporadically planted across the banking so it doesn't become too dominant to take away from the view. Another one that we've not used in the garden previously that we've used is myrtle. And obviously myrtle's got a kind of, you know, a significance, used in the royal weddings since Queen Victoria's time. And obviously the myrtle had always come from Osborne House, which is another English heritage property on the Isle of Wight. So Interestingly, we never had myrtle at Broadsworth, so I was really keen to try and use that. And it's been interesting to see how that's coming on, and it is growing really well. I think it's doing a lot better in the more south-facing parts of where it's been planted so far. It doesn't like being too open to the wind and elements, so we had to be kind of careful where we positioned it in the bed. There's an incredible Quercus ilex home oak, which obviously, again, is a Mediterranean tree and, you know, little nudge towards that style as well. So I'm really pleased with it. I think it's and it's kind of opened up a new planting palette for us to work with as well. So,
and that's interesting. You can add smaller trees and evergreen shrubs into the borders as well to add that different dimension.
Yeah, because I mean, obviously, when certain things will die down, you know, you still want that kind of interest in that structure into the beds. And you know, I think across all the shrubberies, we've got, again, that nice transition from low-growing, you know, like Ruscus, Hypoglossum at the front side, and then tearing up into the different laurels and different, you know, and then euonymus and, you know, all these different types of shrubs. But then always an interesting tree, whether that be like a foxglove tree or an arbutus or an Indian bean tree or something like that. But again, gives you that amazing tearing effect and nice contrast of foliage and tone into the beds as well.
Do you plant or do you plan your summer borders with an idea of what the plants and the flowers are going to look like as it goes into the late summer, autumn? So I'm thinking with seed heads and interest in the border, kind of elongating that interest in the border.
A lot of the things we do have in there currently do that. So obviously the cardoons, the angelicas, you know, the more kind of tall sculptural feature plants you can leave, you know, for as long as you want into the season. And I know from the side of obviously the insects overwintering, you know, into the lot of the kind of seed heads and stuff now, that it is important that we leave certain ones. We'll only leave a few, but again, it's select plants, and they're more of the kind of architectural ones that we tend to leave, to be honest.
So what are your favourite summer border plants then? What are the ones that you always go to that have your wow factor as well?
Well, Monarda, I think, you know, in particular, the Cambridge Scarlet one, I think, you know, just going off of what our visitors love, I think the Hemerocallis fulva, I think they're the kind of really deep red one. I think that's another really popular one. The cardoon, Cyanara cardoon, I think that's, again, one that always gets a lot of the photographs, a lot of pictures. Nobody can quite believe the size of them. The angelicas, heleniums. I like, you know, the kind of more architectural tall plants really that give you the, you know, the kind of real interest. You know, I really like the Nectar Scordans earlier on for their, because they're just really interesting, even as they're kind of peeling out. They kind of look like the, you know, snakes losing the skin. Dahlias, I think, are coming massively back into fashion. We are planting Dahlia Imperialis for the first time this year, and the tree dahlias, and I think they'll be a really popular one, to be honest. I think they're going to become the main one that people ask or want to know if they can grow it in their garden long term.
So what are you looking forward to most about walking through your garden in the summer when the borders are in full bloom?
Well, I think it's just seeing the enjoyment of us visitors, really. We put so much preparation and work into creating the gardens for everybody to come and enjoy. And, you know, the best thing for us gardeners is for visitors to see it and, you know, and take inspiration, you know, to be able to use in their gardens. And, you know, we're all passionate about what we do, and you know, we love as plants, and we love the history of gardens just as much as well. And if we can teach the two at the same time, then we're kind of doing our jobs really well. Yeah, I think it's that. I think it's the enjoyment. And, you know, what I really like is my team works so hard, and the volunteers, they deserve all the praise they get. I think it's amazing as well for, you know, apprentices or new people into gardening to be able to see, you know, the quick wins in gardens as well, and, you know, that you can make in areas and, you know, and I think gardening's amazing in the sense of every day you can see where you've been. That's why we all love what we do.
It's great, isn't it, that every year you can create this beautiful palette of summer flowers in your own garden, taking from inspiration from from bigger public gardens as well. Daniel, thank you very much for telling us more about Bodsworth and how we can create some sensational summer borders for a particularly special summer kiss.
Thanks for listening to the BBC Gardeners World magazine podcast. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts and never miss an episode. If you've enjoyed this episode, please tell others about it and rate us in your podcast provider app.